Recording now. So, hello everybody, and hello Charisse.
Hi, David.
How's it going?
So good, David.
Good.
That's always my answer.
Yeah, exactly.
So good.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm not really sure it could get better.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's great. Yeah, I was going to say, if it wasn't good, we'd just edit that out, wouldn't we?
Right. Yeah, if things sucked, we'd say, oh, man. Edit it out.
So, welcome, everybody. This is the 10th episode of the first series of the Kukwara podcast, Stories for Engagement and Change. And this one's going to be a slightly different format. This is going to be a lot more free form, I think. And what Charisse and I want to do is just sort of take a look at what all this has been about and where Charisse and I are in our thinking about this now, and maybe to look ahead to what might be coming for us, for the Kukwara project, and who knows, for the whole world, Charisse. Huh?
Right, David. I was just thinking the other day how it was just a few years ago that you and I had this idea. We always had such delicious, interesting conversations. Mm-hmm. And after our conversations, I always felt so inspired. And I just kept thinking, wouldn't it be cool if people could eavesdrop into our conversations, if we didn't have any pretense or any plan,
sure,
but we just interacted the way we interact? Wouldn't that be useful? And I think it's really awesome that we get to this point now where we're just about to finish our first season and begin our second season a couple of years later, and several hundred people are actually doing what we dreamed could happen.
Yeah,
listening.
Exactly right.
They're listening. Amazing.
Yeah. And when we get around to that marketing thing, who knows how many will listen to this?
Yes.
Yeah. But that'll, it's true. And you know, I was just
gets on that.
And I was just thinking from what you said there, Charisse, is that, you know, and this isn't, dear listeners, this isn't about, you know, how brilliant Charisse and I are at conversation, but it just made me reflect, Charisse, that what we have probably been doing since the early days of our conversations, our weekly calls together that weren't recorded, we were probably coming from these things which we then turned into the 9 principles that this podcast series has been about. You know, these conversations were about discovery. These conversations were about an openness to finding out what could be next. You know, none of us were trying to show up. Neither of us were trying to show up with a particular point of view that we had to get across, and, you know, win, lose, good, bad, and all that stuff.
No, you know, for me, David, it was the epitome of collaboration, because neither of us knew or had an intention other than listening, digesting, and then building upon what the other one said. And I think that's one of the things, one of our principles, is how important collaboration is in creating things. And yeah. I think that we, you know, unbeknownst to us, that's really, like you say, that's what we were developing and perfecting. And that's why I always came away thinking, wow, that's really good stuff. And what a great example of a way to have a remarkable and magnificent conversation.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And again, I think the other thing that's present for me in that is that it's not like any of the 9 principles are things which are you know, staggeringly new or that people need to sort of take training in, or they need to all of the things that we have pointed out with those 9 principles, people do a lot of the time, but not all the time and not in all contexts. And I think there's, you know, there's a, if we had sort of, if we were able to come up with 9 anti-principles, you know, people will be able to recognize it in a lot of the conversations we have in the world, people have in the world. You know, they are very fixed. They're very perspective driven. They're a very, you know, conversation is about getting something across and trying to make sure that succeeds. And so what we're just opening up here is just bringing, I hope, some awareness to things that human beings naturally do. But if we bring more awareness to it, we can do it more often and therefore have more conversations like the conversations you and I have been having, and people, ripple that out across the globe.
And guess what, David?
Mm.
When we're aligned with those nine principles, we have so much more fun. Things are so much easier and more graceful and peaceful and gentle. And I agree with you. I believe it is innate for us to operate that way. And what changes that is the reactions from the world, the fear, the all of the doubts and self talk that happens that prevents us from operating within that realm. For example, the collaboration, you know, David and I, we depend. It's vital to our partnership collaboration. And sometimes people are threatened by that. And so it doesn't happen, or people don't feel like they have anything to offer because of all the competing voices that happen as we develop and grow into the world of fear and scarcity. And yeah, so we're always kind of vying for belonging and for position. And I think that's the thing that stops us from reaching into our innate tendencies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. And one of the things that you, the listeners, might have noticed is there's been a little bit of a gap between the ninth episode and the 10th. And that's because Charisse and I were aware that there was, after we'd done the podcast on the ninth principle, that we wanted to take some time over what this 10th episode was going to be about. And we were aware that there was something bubbling up. And that's just what Charisse has been talking about. And that has been, you know, we realized that the thing that connected all of those nine principles was this idea of when we're coming from those places, it's just so much more fun. It's just so much more easy.
David and I really enjoy having fun.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I bet you don't, but you know.
Yeah. And you know, fun as a opening up, fun as an expansiveness, you know, fun is not getting something done. You know, fun is not having a party and failing to do anything. I mean, one of the things we've done is we've achieved a podcast. You know, this podcast was a dream for us, and then we made it happen. And did it happen through, it happened through this sense of relaxation and fun, yeah?
Yes, and it's a little bit about play as well. You know, David and I had never done a podcast. And we took an attempt, we took a swing at this recording thing several years ago, and we crashed and burned, frankly. Mm. There were lots of pieces and parts that didn't work together, and the conversations were lovely and fun and opening, and the technology part stopped us. So it's just a good example of staying in action and not allowing that fear to stop us. We could have simply said no. Yeah. We're not any good at this. We can't figure out the technology. We, you know, whatever excuse we might have come up with, we could have just abandoned it. And I don't know about you, David, but I'm so glad we didn't, because this is fun.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So what we thought we'd do with this conversation is just go into some of our thinking around the whole idea of how can work, how can collaboration, how can organizations, how can business, how can communities be more fun and relaxing and expansive and creative? So that's the conversation that we wanted to have today. And I don't know, Charisse, some of the people may know that, you know, my first book was called How to Make Work Fun. And when I wrote that book back in, 95, I was writing it for a world, particularly a British business world, who just had no conception that work could be fun. You know, and on the contrary, and I was thinking about this just last week, because this year is the 20th anniversary of that book. You know, I was thinking of what's changed and what has stayed the same over the years. And a lot has changed. I think it's much more in the conversation now that we should at least consider the idea that work should be a meaningful and purposeful and energizing part of our lives, even if not all of us find that. But at least I think that's more in the conversation, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. And especially as millennials come up.
Yes.
It's much more important to, I would say, 30-year-old and under at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it is. It's just the generational differences.
Yes. Charisse and I just looked at some research done, I think, by the Gallup organization about how many people are apparently miserable in their work. And apparently you get to be slightly less miserable if you're a manager, but not all that much. And apparently the most, and I don't use the word miserable about them, but the research seemed to indicate that the most dissatisfied was the millennial generation. And, you know, I could tell, you know, that some people would read that, or maybe the journalists would have that. Yeah, those millennials are so unsatisfied, you know.
they're rebels. They're not rule followers. They don't have any work ethic. That's what I call
them. That's right. They don't want to do anything.
They don't really know what work is.
You know, and a good friend of mine, Tim Reed, said to me recently, he said, that generation, the calling is out. They're saying, really? Is this the best you can do with work? This idea of, you know, turn up 9 till 6 for 30 odd years, and hopefully when you get to retire, and you call that a good work, you know, and the calling is out on that. So it isn't for me that they're dissatisfied, that they're just stretching, they're pushing the boundaries of what work should be.
David, imagine a world where these 9 principles that we've discussed over the last few months were the core values of a company. Just imagine that.
Yeah.
this is how we communicate. This is how we operate. This is our foundation.
Yes.
What would the world be like if that were so?
Yeah. Wow, what a great idea.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
If you're a manager or a leader in a company, or if you are a business owner, consider creating some core values for the organization that aligns with the things you most adhere to with regards to communication, because really a company is only as good as its communication. And if we can make a workplace safe to make mistakes, and if we can have it be an open conversation that occurs all the time, not just when there's an issue, but all the time, a collaborative environment, I think those two alone would change the game.
Yes. I think they would, and that would be both, because for me they're not separable, but they're both incredibly fun and very productive, because, you know, all of those 9 principles, we have been very clear, all of those 9 principles generate action. They're designed to get people out of whatever place they're in, into making a difference, into making something good happen, into creating something different. And so, you know, again, you know, it's literally back in 1995, the big thing I had pushback on was that if people enjoyed their work, they wouldn't get any work done. and it's like, no, because actually, everybody, and people, the people who are listening to this, and the people who know that, you know, that if you love your work, you get a lot done.
Right.
If you don't love your work, it's when you don't enjoy your environment that you struggle to get something done. Yeah.
I used to manage teams in one of my former lives, and whenever there was someone in the workplace who was obviously not happy, clearly not enjoying the work, I would always wonder what that was. And I would actually probe it. And even in my personal life, if I go to a grocery store and I'm meeting with a cashier on my way out the door, and I ask them how they are, and they say, oh, I'll be great when it's 5 o'clock and I'm done with this thing. I always say, really? You know, it's not even a concept I can get that personally I would spend time in a job or in any work that I didn't at least like, if not love. And I've always loved my work, no matter what my work was.
Sure.
And I think it's because I know that I have a take an inside out approach to that. And I figure it's my responsibility to love my work. It's nobody else's. It's not my boss's. It's not the circumstances that happen around my work. Do I have bad days? Of course. Everyone does, but mostly I knew that I was at choice when I was at work. And I think a lot of times people don't see it that way. And that's another key, I think, to being happy at work is to see that you're at choice.
Sure. Well, one of the principles we talked about was that, we as human beings, we tend to live out the stories that we believe. And it is certainly true, or has been true, that the story of work in our Western society is not a very inspiring and productive one.
Right.
The story of work for most of us has been that work is something you have to do to pay the bills, and you don't have to do it forever, thank goodness, because when you get to 60, 65, you're about to think you'll retire, you know? And if we even subtly believe that, then that, yeah, is going to affect how we show up every day of the goodness knows how many years.
I know teachers who actually know the number of days left to the school year from 100 out. There's like a 100-day countdown to the end of school. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because I realize that they get summers off, so there's something to look forward to after those 100 days. But still, it makes me think, wow, you know, to be in a job that's so soul crushing that you can't wait to be out of it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's everyone's personal journey to figure out what that is for them, and how, what they need to actually be fully engaged and passionate about what they get to do every day. But it's definitely an inside job. There's nothing about it that's outside in.
No, that's right. There is no soul crushing job.
Right.
There is a person soul crushing doing some work, you know, and that, and I know that would, provoke some people. But we all know, you know, we, if we go tonight to a restaurant and have dinner and we are served by two waiters, and one is clearly coming genuinely from a place of service and excitement about what's on the menu and paying attention to us, we know what that feels like, and we know what it feels like when the waiter is going through the motions and, you know, waiting for midnight or whenever they get out. And it's nothing to do with the job. It's all to do with the showing up into the job.
Yeah. Right, David. And I think our job actually right now in the world is to provoke that.
Yes.
I want to poke at it, and I want to create a different dialogue about it. I want people to stop what they're doing, because sometimes you just get numb and you forget that you're at choice, and that you create your own reality through the stories you tell about yourself and the stories of your past and the story that your boss tells about you.
Yes.
So I think it's really great to provoke and to be provocative with our language, and to just in a very loving and gentle way, just invite people to think of it differently, because we're making it all up, as I've said a million times. It's my favorite thing. We're making it all up. Why not make it up so that it really works for us?
Yeah, exactly right. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You're much nicer than I am, David.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you've said the phrase a few times, and it's certainly true of all the foundational principle, I think, is it's an inside out life. You know, we are making this up individually and together all the time, and the trouble is that there is such an idea that is actually outside in. And an example of that would be, you know, I was speaking with a group last week, and I was sharing ideas I have about how we can access, every one of us, no matter what we think the job is, we can access this inside out perspective and show up a particular way, and that's going to benefit how we feel, it's going to benefit the people around us in the team, and it's going to benefit how productive we are. And after all these ideas, you know, somebody said, yes, but you know, how much of that is actually to do with the culture of the organization or your boss? And it's like, shoot. You know, at what point are you going to get over that your parents made you as you are, and your boss makes you as you are, and the organization makes you as you are? Why would you put yourself in that prison? You know, it's just frightening for me. It's for every idea of a boss, a leader creating a culture or creating an environment in the team, you know, I can say, well, here's a team in creating the environment.
Right.
Completely, you know, it's a co-creative universe, you know.
So let's look at that a little bit, David. Let's look at why a person would put themselves in that prison. Yeah. When you said that, my first thought was because it's safe there.
Yes.
Because there's no risk, because they can blame someone else. So they don't have responsibility for their circumstances, and because they've given their power to circumstances.
Yes.
And if they've done it at work, they've probably done it at home. They've probably done it everywhere, because the old phrase, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah.
I think it just, you know, we just, it's sort of a giving up. And it really, for people like you and I, David, it seems inconceivable.
Yes.
And makes me sad.
Yes.
And I think we can point to, all of us, if we're listening, can point to the people around us who've done that. Who've been the giver uppers. And what we want to provoke in with our podcast and with the Kokora project as a whole are those people who want to wake up and who want to be part of making change fun, and who want to provoke thought and provoke action. And that's why we've created a community with our Kokora project, and that's why we're creating courses and programs to help guide people, not from a lecturing standpoint, not from a theory standpoint, but from an experiential standpoint of, let's be in this together. Let's see what we can create. Let's collaborate. Let's exercise our 9 principles in real life with you, the people who are going to make the biggest difference in the world. And it doesn't, you know, someone who's sleepy and mopey and sad and dejected and pissed off and has given up can wake up in an instant, because the new story can emerge. And it doesn't mean, there's not a death sentence. It's a prison, but it's not a life sentence.
Well,
so our invitation is really, our invitation is to take note of what emotions are coming up in you as you listen to this. And I'm like Norma Ray right now with a great big sign standing on the table. Like, really, let's come together and create something different.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. Absolutely. Yeah. And I love the idea of the life imprisonment as well, because I mean, for me, you know, let's expand it to the, you know, first of all, let me say this. One of the reasons that people stay in that prison is because they've been conditioned there, and there's so much apparent evidence that would say this is just how the way it is, that it's not a story, it's just exactly how it is. And the evidence is, you know, all the investment in developing our bosses and developing our leaders, therefore they must be the ones who are in control, they must be the ones who have the power, they must be the source of stuff because they get all the attention. And it's also, and by the way, we, you know, if we really feel that, we can walk down any corridor inside any organization and stop at the water cooler and say, do you agree with me that it's an outside-in world, that it's all to do with my boss? And we're always going to find people who will agree with that. And so I just add to what you were saying, Charisse, that let's make no bones about it. This is possible for everybody. And for those of us who are, you know, near the start of this thing, it's an act of courage to step out of that collective sleepiness, you know? You have to go against what the tribe wants you to believe, how the tribe wants you to behave, you know? The trouble is the tribe's got something in mind for us, and it's not great.
Right.
And then the other thing I'd say around that is, in terms of the story of work, you know, the story of work continues to be that work is the thing that we do, and the you know, the living, and there's, maybe there's education before it and there's retirement after it. What about the idea that our whole life is the work? From the day that we're born right through to the day that we die, this is our work is fundamentally to be Charisse McCrory. The work of David Firth is to be David Firth. Now, how is David Firth going to spend his time? What's he going to get up to, you know? And some of that, this thing called money is generated. Some of it, it's relationships. Some of it is, you know, connection to other people. But it's all the work.
Yeah, even from the days of on the playground, you know, I think we're given spiritually. I believe we are here for a purpose, and everything, every experience is to be used.
Yes.
So our work is to be used for something, to give something back or to learn something. And I also believe that we're precariously placed in some of these challenging situations because of the learning we get. Mm. And And that comes so many times, so often. Some of our biggest lessons come through our relationships at work. Yes. Whether I don't want to make this sound like we're only talking about jobs, the J-O-B, mm-hmm. as a lot of entrepreneurs call it. Because I get the same sensibility sometimes with entrepreneurs, and I work a lot with entrepreneurs. So this outside in, how's your business question can lead to a very outside, the economy, the market has really fallen, and sure. I can't get any good help, and I got these millennials who I can't depend on, and I have, my profit margins are shrinking. I have to go so low with my price because my salesmen suck. And I mean, there's always something outside that you can point to that isn't working.
Yes.
And so, whether or not you work for someone or you are your boss, there's still something to look into as for the relationship that you have with work and with who you're being in that work. My biggest commitment ever in the world of coaching has always been to have people be themselves, to bring themselves to work, to show up as you,
yes,
and to be as authentic as possible in any work that they do.
Yes.
I want it to feel the same. I want them to be the same person in their work they are with their friends, because that's the most peaceful and easy way to live.
Sure.
And it serves the world the most because we get the real you.
Sure. Exactly right.
By the way, P.S.
Beautiful. Yeah. I was just thinking, and I shared with this story with you, Cherise, before we started recording, that my son got an F in a class because it was a technology class, and a computer class, and they were being asked to look at certain websites to research something, and my son got an F because the teacher came around and found that he was on a particular gaming site. And so he got an F. And I said to my son, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "My friend told me to do it." And just that is such, of course, an outside-in perspective. And 13-year-old boys get to play with that, but it's at what point do we sort of grow up and say, I get to actually to make some choices about this.
Yeah, and back in my day, if I had said that, my mom would have said, "If your friend told you to jump off a bridge, would you have done that?"
Exactly right. But apparently, as grown adults, when we're thinking about work, we have no problem saying, "Well, the economy is tough, therefore," or right. "My boss is a jerk, therefore, of course, I'm going to be miserable because my boss is a jerk." Or, variants of basically what it is, "The culture made me do it."
Right. And it's another way to belong, to be in that camp. Because if you're the Pollyanna, if you're the one who's always happy, I had a friend of mine who my positivity drove her crazy. She couldn't take it. One day she looked at me and she said, "Cherise, is the sky always blue in your world?" And I just unflinchingly said, "Well, yeah, it is."
Yeah.
So people, I think you fit in better when you're a whiner and a complainer.
Yes.
Which is sad. And we want to change that.
We do want to shift
that. It's not how it's meant to be.
It is not how it's meant to be. Whatever joy you get out of whining and complaining and living an outside-in life, there is a whole bigger life available from the inside out perspective. Oh, and by the way, it makes a difference in the world, and this is something, Cherise, that I've gotten more and more clearer over the years, from that terror that the bosses I used to speak to back in 1995 about making work fun, that all of a sudden I was going to have introduced chaos into their organizations. No, people are going to want to do more work with it because they're enjoying it, and that's something that's become clear and clear and clear. If I meet somebody who is coming from that inside out perspective, if I meet somebody who is so clear that they love their work, they want to do more and more. They want to do that project, do another one. Do a bigger one,
It's just statistically proven. Gallup has done all sorts of studies on how much more productive happy people are.
Yes.
Along with a lot of positive psychologists. There's all kinds of research that backs that.
Yes.
And what I would say to that is, we get to come from the place we come from. So if the ideal would be to be happy in any circumstance.
Yes.
Not that the myriad of human emotions isn't important. You know, when there's a loss, there's sadness. When someone says something hurtful, there might be anger or pain, or, you know, there's sympathy, and there's all kinds of emotions that aren't necessarily positive, but those are temporary. Those are fleeting. Those are not ways of living.
Right? Yes.
So the standard, the default for us, when we came out of the womb, the only time we weren't happy is when we weren't fed.
Yes.
And as we grew into toddlers, you know, we were curious. We were innately very interested in jumping off bridges or whatever it was that, you know, we were curious, and we didn't know what the risks are. So our parents told us, kept us safe. Don't cross the street without looking. Don't go near the street. Don't touch the fire.
Hmm.
And that's how we learned the boundaries. But I think we sometimes have an overcautious boundary as we grow up, and we don't really recreate that story when we are safe and when we are grown and can make conscious decisions.
Yes. Beautiful. And again, you know, I think just what really came through there, Charisse, was, and this I think links back to probably what we were saying right at the beginning of this episode, that actually it's natural to be this. That's the thing. It's not actually that there's something wrong with Charisse that she thinks she's so positive and happy all the time.
Right.
You know, that's actually how it's supposed to be. And you know, so I'm just thinking, you know, when we do something like the Kokoro process, it's not that we're sort of training people to challenge their story or training people to use right-hand language. It happens naturally because of the things that happen during the process, that it just allows people to get into that place very naturally and very effortlessly and without us telling them to do it. And that's the proof of this for me. That's the natural state. All the other stuff, all the separation and all the sort of darker way of looking at all that misery is not natural, but is unfortunately created.
And it feels natural because it's our habit.
Yes.
So it just feels like it's the way it is. And, you know, I would love to claim that we made all these 9 principles up, David, that we invented them, that we, they come from our brilliance. But the truth is, you and I together over the years have seen enough incidents of these ways of being in action, and we've seen the other way. And
yes.
So the contrast is remarkable. And it just took our collaborative, loving conversations to get to sort of an organization of them.
Mm.
And that's what we think we delivered in the first 9 of the Kokoro podcast. We essentially were reminding ourselves really at the beginning, like what is it that makes this so special? What is it that makes life fun and easy and graceful? And we believe those, at least those, and maybe more, because of course this is an ever evolving project for David and I.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? We might have 25 by the time we're done.
That's right.
and actually what's really great, and what I most love about the work that we're doing here, David, is that we are collaborating not just with each other, but with you.
Yes.
And so what I'd like to remind you to do, we've done this on every podcast, I believe, we've given you a reminder to go to our website, not because we want visitors on our website, although we do. We also want you to gain value. So if you go to the podcast page after every episode, there's a handout and a challenge. And our website actually has the transcript for each podcast. And alongside that is also an audio button that you can click. And if you have ideas, if I pushed your button in the provocation of who you're being at work, I want to hear from you. So I would love it if you would go to our website and leave an audio message. It works just like voicemail. You click the button and speak, and then you're recorded. Because we are certainly not happy with this project until we have the voices of all of you chiming in.
Mm.
This is really important to our evolvement as a planet, and it's important to our project, and it's one of our core values in our business.
Beautifully said. Yeah. So please come and interact with us. There's an opportunity to interact with us on the Kokora Project Facebook page. There is, if you register on the site, you will get access to the news about all the sort of fun programs and activities that we have got in the pipeline. And it would be great to have you along with that, because that's it's going to be fun.
Yep. Agreed. Okay, David, it feels like we've rounded the corner. I love that we were intending to just be free form today.
That's right.
It feels fun. And of course, we did it because it would be fun, right?
Exactly right.
So thank you to everyone who has subscribed and left a review on our iTunes page. We appreciate you more than you know. What we'd love to see is that you start sharing this with your friends, because there's somebody that you were thinking of as we were discussing this topic today that probably needs to hear this. So if whoever that person is, it's very easy with your iPhone to share this episode. There's a share button right on, built into the podcast app on the iPhone. So share this with anyone that you think might get some value from it. And stay tuned for season two. We are very excited for what's to come.
Beautifully said. Again, Charisse, thanks so much, Charisse. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next time.
Bye, David.